Hello, and welcome to Another Moment in Creation with Diana Wedge. Today, we're talking about snow. Whether solid and found at the poles of the earth in the form of steam through evaporation, humidity, and such, or as a liquid that fills our oceans and comes from your tap to drink, water always exists in one form or the other. When the temperature is below freezing, we experience water through the chill of snow. Let's begin our chat with a nice little poem called White Noise by Barbara Vance. In all the world, there's nothing like the sound of falling snow, the only noise I've ever known that makes the clocks move slow. The only sound that sweeps away the din of city streets and wraps around in soft embrace most everyone it meets. A sound that's not a sound at all, a quiet, soft and dear, that comforts all the sleepy souls who sit and watch and hear. Either permanently or temporarily, snow covers about 23% of the Earth's surface. When we think of snow, we think of snowflakes. When people say snowflake, they often mean snow crystal. Snow crystals are not frozen raindrops. That is called sleet. A snow crystal appears when water vapor in the air converts directly into ice without first becoming liquid water. As more water vapor condenses onto an emerging snow crystal, it grows and develops, and that is when its ornate patterns emerge. This single layer of ice, we call a snow crystal, has water molecules within it which are all lined up in a precise hexagonal array. Snow crystals display that characteristic six-fold symmetry we are all too familiar with here in Canada. A snowflake, on the other hand, is a more general term. It can mean an individual snow crystal, but it can also mean just about anything that falls from the winter clouds. Often, hundreds or even thousands of snow crystals collide and stick together in mid-air as they fall, forming flimsy puffballs we call snowflakes. Calling a snow crystal a snowflake is just fine. It's like calling a daisy a flower. Not all snowflakes look like six-pointed stars. Many do, but there's also quite a few odd-looking crystals falling from the winter clouds. If two small, six-branched snow crystals collide in mid-air, they might stick together and grow into a 12-branched snowflake. You might think such an ideal collision like that would be rare, but 12-branchers are actually not too hard to find if you keep an eye out for them. Environmental engineer Martin Tempier explains that snow crystals are some of the most beautiful shapes that nature has to offer, and no two flakes are alike. We now know that not only temperature, but humidity influences crystal formation and shape. The beautiful six-legged star-like crystals grow in the air that's warmer than -3 degrees Celsius. If you go between -3 and -10 degrees Celsius, snow falls as little prisms. And between -10 and -22 degrees Celsius, it's little stars again. But below that, it becomes prisms once more. Nevertheless, scientists still cannot tell exactly why snow crystal shapes change so much with temperature. These shapes depend on how water vapor molecules are incorporated into the growing ice crystal. And this physical process governing crystal growth, oh boy, it's still very complex and not well understood yet. Is it true that no two snowflakes are alike? Actually, smaller snowflakes that take the shape of hexagonal prisms look pretty much the same. On the other hand, larger star-shaped crystals are all different and unique. Here's a little math on the subject. Crystals can easily have 100 or more features that can be recombined in different ways. That leads to at least a staggering 10 to the 158th power of different possibilities. That, in other words, can be like 10 to the 70th power times the number of atoms in the entire universe. However, in laboratory conditions, identical synthetic ice crystals have been created using a very specific environment and controlled process. These are real snowflake crystals, but not created in nature without human intervention. Here's something we can take concerning the uniqueness of snowflakes and snow crystals. Just remember this. God made you so unique that there has never, ever been, and never, ever will be, anyone who has ever had your specific features and genetic makeup. Did you know that about 98% of the Earth's water is in the oceans, leaving about 2% as fresh water? And about 90% of that fresh water is permanently frozen, mostly locked up in the Antarctic and Greenland ice sheets. Let's spend a few minutes looking at glaciology. Glaciology is not only the study of glaciers, but it more specifically is the study of ice and its effect on our Earth. Meteorologist Michael Ord has studied and written extensively about the Ice Age. He has made excellent scientific contributions to our understanding of this post-flood period in Earth's history. Ord tells us that ice cores found in the North and South Poles are thought to show 100,000 years of annual snow accumulation. However, this seems to be contradicted by a BBC report that said a plane squadron from World War II had been downed in Greenland, but yet it was found buried in 260 feet of ice that had accumulated in only 50 years. That being said, the ice cores should properly be understood as the remnants of the post-flood ice age and snowfall since then. There are very detailed explanations of how researchers who follow uniformitarian thought come to their conclusions. Remember, uniformitarianism is the idea that processes concerning the Earth and its properties have always worked in a consistent long-age pattern. Basically, uniformitarian scientists believe the Earth is billions of years old, so as a result, they believe that many ice ages repeated over the last 2 to 3 million years. Therefore, they assume that the Greenland and Antarctica ice sheets have existed for many millions of years. However, short-age researchers see the same evidence but come to a different conclusion. In brief, Ord continues to explain that in the young age model, the ice over Greenland and Antarctica builds rapidly for about 500 years during a rapid ice age. Then, the amount of snowfall tapers off during the next 200 years of deglaciation. The amount of snowfall should generally be proportional to the temperature of the North Atlantic Ocean, the height of the building ice sheet, and the distance from a main storm track. During a 700-year post-flood ice age, the oceans would have gradually cooled and the ice sheet thickened with time. There is so much more information on this topic, but you will have to do your own research to understand it better. Let's just say there are lots of assumptions, estimates, and information regarding the thinness of lower layers and the thickness of higher layers of frozen ice to consider. I highly recommend Michael Ord's research. Here's an outline of Ord's research on the connection between the flood and the ice age. Yes, there is very strong evidence that the world has been through an ice age. It affected all the world, especially the latitudes closest to the poles. Ice and snow covered Canada, much of the northern USA, northern Eurasia, Greenland, and Antarctica. However, researchers who come from a young age presupposition believe the evidence shows there was a single ice age, not many ice ages, as old age researchers believe. The cause of the ice age is a mystery to some researchers. Obviously, the climate would need to be colder, but a gradual cooling of the climate would not work because then there would be less evaporation, so less snow. How is it possible to have both cold climate, and lots of evaporation. Ord's investigation does indeed create a plausible mechanism for the Ice Age, that it was an aftermath of Noah's flood. The reference found in Genesis chapter 7, verse 11 states that all the fountains of the great deep broke up. This would have brought hot water and lava to the earth's surface. This in itself would have released a lot of water vapor into the atmosphere due to volcanic emissions often having large proportions of water. Also, when these fountains poured directly into the oceans, it would have raised their average temperature, increasing evaporation. And all the volcanic ash in the air after the flood would block out a lot of sunlight, which would have cooled the land. The flood would have produced the necessary combination of cool continental climate from the volcanic ash, acting in essence as a sunblock, and lots of evaporation from the warming oceans. This would result in increased snowfall over the continents. If the snow fell faster than it melted, ice sheets would result. This ice buildup would have lasted several centuries. Eventually, as the seas gradually cooled and the ash settled out of the atmosphere, the ice sheets would begin to melt. Sometimes the melting was rapid enough that the rivers which drained these ice sheets would flood. Kenneth Liebrick is a professor of physics at the California Institute of Technology, or Caltech, and he loves to study snowflakes. He answers the question, why are snowflakes white? Snow crystals are made of ice, and ice is clear, like glass. If you look at an individual snow crystal under a microscope, it looks clear, like a little piece of shaped glass. So why does a snowbank look white? Imagine you made three small piles, one of salt, one of sugar, and one of crushed glass. All three of these materials are intrinsically colorless and transparent, especially the glass, but the piles look white because they reflect light instead of absorbing it. A snowbank looks white for the same reason. Light reflects off the surfaces of all those countless snow crystals. A cloud looks white for the same reason, except the light reflects off small water droplets, which are also clear. Let's take a moment to talk about snowflake sizes. The smallest snowflakes are called diamond dust crystals, and they might be as small as the diameter of a human hair. The faceted crystals sparkle in sunlight as they float through the air, which is how they got their name. They are somewhat rare, appearing in bitter cold weather. The largest snow crystal ever photographed measured 10 millimeters from tip to tip. This winter, try this little experiment. Make a snowman and ask the closest child if they think the snowman just appeared by chance, by snowflakes falling in just the right way and stacking themselves all by themselves until the snowman was shaped, or if they think someone built the snowman. I am pretty certain that the child will see the evidence of your handiwork, that there was a designer who did indeed build the snowman. Humans are far more complex than a snowman. This begs the bigger question. Why do some people deny that the person creating this snowman is indeed designed? It is heartbreaking that there are people who willfully reject this clear evidence. Knowing we are created by God and that we exist because He chose to give us life helps us to realize we are intentionally placed here and that we are loved by Him. The next time you see those wintry figures built of snow, remember, the designer who created something a lot more complex, you, and you matter to Him. The design that we observe in natural revelation is not enough to come to a full knowledge of who the designer, God, is. This intimate knowledge, this special revelation, is presented to us in the Bible. The Bible tells us about the designer of the universe and how he created everything in it. It tells us of a perfectly designed world that was created for mankind to live in. This is Diana signing off until we share another moment in creation.